Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Matt Kwasaborski Show calling you live and direct from Prague, Czech Republic, heart of Central Europe. And here we are again as the weekly podcast, the Matt Kwasaborski Show, will be on the air for the next 45 minutes. It's 1 o'clock here in Prague, and it's also 7 o'clock a.m. on the East Coast, back in my hometown of Philadelphia. So we'll talk a little bit about the NFL this week, looking at last week and how the picks went, and also talk about some situations happening over here in Europe, especially Central Europe, where we had elections yesterday here in the Czech Republic, and we'll get into those ramifications a little bit later. But first, I'd like to thank Blog Talk Radio for being invented, and I also like the internet for being formed by either the CIA or Al Gore, and I also like to thank my loyal listeners for listening in, tuning in, whether you're listening on the archive or you're listening live. This is a call-in show. You would have to call a U.S. number, so you would dial 001, area code 323-642-1248 if you do want to call and debate me. If not, hopefully you're just tuning in and listening, or at least going on for next week's picks and listening to week 7's picks as well. But first of all, we talked a little bit last week about the Czech Republic and facing the elections that are coming up here that happened on Friday and Saturday. Interestingly, in a European nation, most of the elections are done on a Sunday, but here in the Czech Republic, they did them on all day Friday, a work day, and also on all day on Saturday, which is normally obviously a free day for those not working in the service industry, but work, typical weekday weeks from Monday to Friday. So we talked what the scenario was last week, and obviously the prediction that we made, that we talked about, it was nothing like a major prediction or coming out of left field, but it was that the Czech political party called ANO, which stands for which means yes in English, but it also stands for a movement more than a political party, and it stands for disenfranchised voters or disinterested people that are sick and tired of the status quo. It was formed in 2011 by businessman Andrej Babiš, who is now pretty much going to be the next prime minister of the Czech Republic, and his background is a businessman. He claims that he will put the country on the right path. He claims that he'll run the country like a business, and why shouldn't people elect him? Because mainly because he is a successful businessman and all his policies will work. We talked about the dangers of that last week, but there's also some interesting results coming out of who finished in second, third place, and fourth place, and so on and so forth. But if you are an American listening to the show, majority of European politics, you don't really vote for the candidate as much as you vote for the actual political party. So, for example, when people go to the polls, they don't look at the leaders of the party, but basically you're voting for the party. So if you choose one party called ANO, or you choose the Social Democrats or the Communists or the far right party or the Pirate Party, it means you don't go in voting for you don't see the person's name next to it in terms of that's who you're electing. You're basically electing the party to go in power. So for example, if in America, if you vote for either Republicans or Democrats, you basically are voting party down the line. So you hope that they achieve everything. You don't really vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton directly. They were the leaders of their party. So therefore, since the Republican Party would have won, then Donald Trump would have become the actual president of the country. So basically what happens here is that the ANO party, which won with almost 30% of the vote, which is quite surprising, the president of the Czech Republic, Miloš Zeman, will usually ask the head of the party who won the elections to serve as prime minister. And that's pretty much what will happen. But because ANO does not have a clear majority in that they have the most seats, but they don't have a majority, they have to form a coalition with other political parties that were represented. And the Czechs, interestingly, while they elected a party that has no real platform or no real vision for the country, outside of the fact that it'll make the economy better and it's anti-immigration and it's also a little bit anti-EU, there's 8 other parties that were elected that will have seats. So what this party or ANO has to do is form a coalition with the remaining political parties in hopes of forming a stable government. The interesting part of the elections, which is, I think it's pretty much talks about how things are going in the world today, especially the West. People are just tired of the sick and tired of the status quo. They're feeding off a few things. One is that the economy is awful. This is how we got here, and that was pretty much what Ano started to politicize or go onto their platform about the fact that the Czech economy is doing so bad, that the financial crisis of Europe that started in the U.S. in 2008 and spread to Europe and had a second crisis here in 2010, and then reports of all these rich bankers who many people blame for the financial crisis were getting bonuses, really started turning away people from mainstream politicians who were closely linked to banks, closely linked to the financial world. And even in America, Donald Trump campaigned on the fact that he would drain the swamp and all those connected to Wall Street, and then he fills his cabinet with a bunch of people from Wall Street and really rich businessmen. But that's not here nor there. It just goes to show you that a new elite has been elected in various parts of the world. But what happened here was that Andrej Babiš was the Minister of Finance. His industry was both the agricultural industry and the media industry. When you think about the fact that he owned two of the popular daily newspapers here, daily publications here, him and his party had the chance to influence people's minds and thoughts on a daily basis without even directly reaching them. These papers were going to be bought, and it could be put, and the platform could be read by the fact that whatever Andrej Babiš wanted to write about, or his party wanted to write about, or dictate to, the people would read about it in a highly entertaining way. And that has been sort of the situation that's also happened in next door in Slovakia. Now you have a group called Penta, which is a financial service, owns a lot of the media. So therefore, you see you may not have business and politics, or you may not want businessmen in politics or politics and business, but this is definitely creeping towards the media. Getting a little off track here, basically what I wanted to talk about, but the Czech Republic, as well as the United States, elected a successful business person. Okay, Donald Trump, for all his financial background, was a successful businessman. You don't get to be worth billions of dollars by doing something wrong. Same thing with Andrej Babiš. He's worth billions of dollars, second richest person in the Czech Republic, and they both have sort of an authoritarian way. You know, these are two gentlemen who are used to walking into the boardroom or their business meetings and say, my name is Andrej Babiš, or my name is Donald Trump. This is what I want to see done. This is what we want to achieve, and these are our goals. Get it done. They're not used to having to work with others so very well. They're not used to having people challenge them or maybe not wanting to work in the government with them. And you see Donald Trump in his first 9-10 months as the United States president has had a severely hard time understanding the mechanisms of what a constitutional republic is and a democracy is. He doesn't understand that people will go against him. He doesn't understand when the judicial courts strike down his immigration policies. He doesn't understand when people on the left and his own party do not agree with the way he tweets about North Korea or things around the world. And I think you're going to see the same thing here with Ano. They win 30% of the vote, and now they're going to have to form a coalition government with any of the parties. The chairman, Andrej Babiš, again last night stated on TV that he's willing to work with any party. It doesn't necessarily have to be the party that's second, third, or fourth. Andrej Babiš is also under investigation for fraudulent attempts of the distribution of EU funds. His companies, especially his agricultural companies, not so much the media companies, get a lot of subsidies from the EU. And the EU wants to know where this money is going. And he's under investigation for fraud, that basically he misappropriated some of the use of these funds for political, either, you know, they were not, the money was not, the money that was given for a specific purpose towards his subsidies or for his agricultural companies. And apparently some of the money cannot be traced back or proven that it was used in the very aspects of the way it was designated to be used. So he's under investigation of that. The other background of Andrej Babiš, excuse me, his family, he grew up as the son of wealthy communist elites in Czechoslovakia. Basically, his parents were members of the Communist Party hierarchy, and therefore, Andrej Babiš was raised with the idea that communism is the best way to rule a society. And it's kind of interesting to see how he will take these sort of things that he learned as a child. Did he become a pure capitalist? Did he become anti-communist? No one really knows because he doesn't really have a platform. His platform is basically, I'm a successful businessman and I'm going to run this country the best way possible and get it right on track. We're against the EU in a way, even though he says he's pro-Europe, he's a little bit against the EU. He's against immigration or migration, which is a huge topic around Europe these days, and also in the West, going on in the United States, all of these populist leaders, which they are, they don't take a stance. They kind of either flip-flop or they kind of have their own choices, and they think they speak for the common person, basically saying that immigration is wrong, Islam is coming, is going to take over our societies. And you see a far-right party called the SPD party, led curiously by a Japanese Czech man who basically platformed on the fact that the EU is bad. We should get out of the EU. It just dictates to us. We should be our own republic, and we're against zero tolerance of any migration. He's encouraged people to walk pigs around mosques, which there are really no mosques here in the Czech Republic. There's Islamic prayer centers, but so be it. He said we should not eat kebabs, basically because kebabs are run by Turkish immigrants that come to the Czech Republic and set up kebab shops. But he himself was raised both in Japan and the Czech Republic, selling cuddly toys or something, the way he became popular. His party finished fourth in the voting, but barely fourth in the voting. I mean, the difference between from Ano, which was elected with 30% of the vote approximately. Then you have the old conservative stalwarts, the ODS party, which I guess you can sort of consider the old school or old guard Republicans if you're an American, finishes 11.3%. Then this upstart pirate party finishes in third place with approximately 10.8% of the vote, followed by the far extremist right-wing party, the SPD, with about 10.65% of the vote. Then, curiously enough, you have the communists that came in at 7.8%, which they're down, I guess, a whole 100% in the last parliamentary elections when I first moved here in 2012. But I think the last elections were 2013. I'm not really sure, actually, if it was 2012. Anyway, they finished with about 14%, so they're down. But the ruling party that's been in control for the last 5 years, which are the Social Democrats, finished with 7.3% of the vote. Give you some idea of what the Czech Republic is doing economically. It is basically running on all cylinders right now. Unemployment is at a record low here in the Czech Republic, especially in Prague. I know there's unemployment out in the hinterlands and all the cities and stuff like that, and I think that's been what when the globalized world has been formed since the fall of communism. Everyone goes to the big cities or the capitals. But still, unemployment is low. The Czech corona is going very strong ever since the government decided to stop depressing it in a way, in a sense of just letting it go to see how it would perform. Just to give you an example, as early as March of this year, as an American, I was paying $1, I would get 26 Czech crown. So therefore, everything was a lot cheaper. Now the Czech crown is roughly about 21.5 for the dollar. And a lot of it, some of that has to do with Donald Trump's economic policies and making the dollar a little bit weaker, which isn't a terribly bad thing for American businesses that export to different countries. But the fact that, just that fact, my rent has jumped up like $75 to $100 per month, just based upon the fact that the Czech Koruna is doing very strong against the dollar, and the dollar has been a little bit weaker, just to go show you. So it wasn't so much that my political science teacher, civics teacher in high school, Mr. Gannon, used to say that people would vote based upon what was in their pocket. And do I have a dollar more in my pocket today than when I voted the last time? If you say yes, you usually leave the ruling party in. If you say no, then you vote the ruling party out. So even though it's a little bit more complicated here in Europe in the terms of the way parties are chosen, the Social Democrats, who in a way benefited from the old policies of ODS economically, are finished a distant fifth in the elections with 7.3%. If we go back to this far-right party at 10.65%, who is basically on anti-EU, definitely no migration, no Islamization of the Czech Republic, and basically has taken this stance only recently in the last couple of years. A, you wonder who's supporting him. I read one person, there's a quote saying, the quote by an unemployed worker said, I support his views are close to mine, and I don't want migration here in the Czech Republic. You wonder where the funding's coming from. And it goes to the larger question that, as we've seen throughout the West, not just in Europe, but also in the United States, that Russia is really trying to infiltrate, influence elections. And they've been supporting anti-EU parties or anti-establishment parties really ever since, for a really long time, even before the invasion of Ukraine, but ever since 2014 or 2013 when Russia invaded Ukraine and you had the Euromaidan. And you also had, which I think is not a coincidence, you had Edward Snowden, who somehow wound up in Russia, the former NSA worker who understood the way the internet works, especially how to influence people through social media, how to build up defenses, how to cyber attack different governments and go through their securities. I don't think that's really a coincidence that since the Euromaidan and Edward Snowden's since he defected from the United States to Russia. Is really a coincidence. I think he's really shown the Russian government how to influence and use the internet as a weapon and turn the internet into weaponization of people's minds and their influences. Because even if you go back to Putin before Edward Snowden, before Ukraine, they were pretty much saying that the internet was a CIA invention, therefore it's controlled by the Americans and we should build our own internet within Russia, and basically was against it. And ever since Edward Snowden and the Euromaidan, they've sort of weaponized it and using it to their advantage. So there's a lot of speculation that these far-right parties who are anti-EU, meaning they're not getting any funding from the EU government, and yes, they're led by business people, successful business people, but where really is their funding coming from? Through Russia, through people that are anti-EU, or through anti-West or anti-democracy? You really have to wonder how a far-right party in a country that really has not taken many migrants at all from fleeing from the terrible fascist regime of ISIS, really isn't. I don't believe there's any mosques in the Czech Republic. I know there's an Islamic prayer center here in Prague, but it's not an official mosque. And the number of migrants compared to, let's say, Austria, which is right next door, is really minute in comparison to countries like Germany and what's happening in France and these larger countries with large land masses. But pretty much the Visegrad countries, which includes Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, and Poland, have really not taken any share of the migrants and have rejected the EU's quota. Basically, the EU has said to different of these countries, you have to take X amount of migrants. And the countries of the Visegrad rejected that. And they rejected it on the notion that that the EU should not be the one dictating to who can come in and out of their countries. It's basically taking a nationalistic approach. So you see these supranational institutions. And we'll go back to the Soviet Union, which was international in the sense that it stretched and annexed lands, but it also had controlling interests over Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, and the Iron Curtain, and down to Yugoslavia. People revolted against those in the beginning in 1989, 27 years ago. The EU has only grown stronger. NATO has only grown larger. That now people are rejecting these types of supranational, international conglomerates, political conglomerates, and military conglomerates. You see this being further dismantled. The idea of the globalization of the economics is the one thing to where these nationalist parties and populist parties don't know exactly how to combat that. Basically saying that the world's economy, ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, has become so intertwined, and they're really not sure how to battle against that. Sure, they can go against the EU because people can see what the EU is doing. They can go against the structure of the world since World War II because they think that it's failed them a lot of ways and that this globalization movement is the reason why there is no more there aren't a lot of jobs in the West to be had. Whereas one can look at it as we've had an evolution of our economic system, or the fact that, well, the jobs were taken away, and back in the day, in the 80s, 80s, 70s, 60s, and the 50s, we had jobs, we had healthcare, we had access to healthcare. Now that stuff is being slowly taken away. People are revolting against that, and that's what really a democracy is. It is a civil revolution in the sense if you're not happy with the status quo, then we're going to vote in the other party. But what's now happening is that they're not even happy with the alternate party anymore. People are electing people are electing parties and politicians that have never been in office before, never have sat down in a parliament before and was a politician. And I think that's an interesting way the world is taking shape these days. You see the rise of China everywhere. In fact, I was looking at the local news yesterday on the TV, and they're showing highlights not just from the Czech football or soccer league, but they're showing the highlights of the Chinese league. But you also see highlights of the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and those things like that. So it's kind of interesting the way the world is. But basically, before we get to the NFLs, we only have 25 minutes left, 24 minutes left. People are revolting against the status quo, the way the world has existed in the last 25 years, 25 plus or so years, and we'll go to the fall of the Soviet Union. There has just been a very much a backlash against the way the people of the world who have ruled the world for the last, let's say, 25, 30 years, people are going against that. They don't think that there should be so much international influence into local and regional politics. They want people that are strong, successful businessmen. Doesn't matter what their morals are. Has no idea what their morals are, their background, but they see these people as strong, successful, rich businessmen, and they want to elect someone that hopefully will help them getting the job. Hopefully will put them back to work, hopefully slow down the loss of jobs and create more jobs. Even in countries where the European Union, you hear less about the financial crisis these days and you hear more about migration, which means that the financial crisis, Europe is slowly emerging from it. That you see that the cyclical nature of economics is that Europe's is on the rebound now through international investment. A lot of it has to do through the investment of the Chinese into different businesses, loans that they're giving out, or if you see investment from foreign countries. But people are rejecting that sort of idea of having international influence into politics, even though it's really happening. People want their own people in power, and they want people that have not been influenced or have been in power in the last 25, 30 years, and that's what's happening these days in politics. So once again, the Czechs have elected the ANO party, led by Andrej Babiš, who will be asked to be formed a government by the current president, Miloš Zeman, who is a former member of the Communist Party as well as Andrej Babiš. He was a member of the Communist Party, but he was raised in communist hierarchy in Slovakia. The stalwart conservatives, the ODS, who have been in power for a long time, then were rejected in the last parliamentary election due to a massive corruption scheme, finished in second place, but barely beating out the upstart Pirate Party and also the far-right party. So those are the four big parties. ANO gets 30%, ODS gets 11.3%, the Pirate Party 10.8%, and this the far-right party, SPD, gets 10.65%. Then you have the Communists, the Social Democrats who were in power, the Christian Democrat parties, the top 09 parties, and Stan. The one thing I'll say about the Czech Republic is that if you want to be the prime minister in 10 years, form your own political party now. Really, ANO was formed in 2011. The Pirate Party was founded in 2010. The SPD Party, which is newly formed, was founded in 2014 or 15. The Communists have been around for a while, and the Social Democrats, but really the top three out of the four parties have been formed in the last 8 years. So if you want to become Prime Minister of the Czech Republic one day, form your political party today. So that's the little bit of the rant here. I know it was sort of all over the place, but basically the Visegrad countries, Poland, Slovakia, now the Czech Republic have rejected the way the system has been in place for the last 25, 30 years. They're putting in anti-EU parties, and they're also putting in people that are against the migration or on the fear that their countries will be taken over by Muslims or they'll be radicalized. And there will be further attacks like you see in London and Paris and Brussels, unfortunately, that will start happening in the streets of Warsaw, Budapest, Bratislava, and Prague. And that's what people don't want. No one wants that, obviously. but they're voting against the fear that these attacks will eventually happen in these countries as well, of Central Europe. So let's turn to the NFL. All right, last week, the picks, I went 7 wins and 7 losses, which is not bad, which means if I would have bet 1 Czech crown per game, I would have broke even. I would have not won any money. I have not lost any money. And that leads me to be going into week 7, only 3 games under the 500 mark, basically meaning that even. So I basically would be down 3 Czech crowns if I bet every NFL game the way I do. So I do want to specify. I will specify that no one really does this. A betting person does not bet every single game. They will choose the games they think they would win, and they would put money only on those games. If I'm in picking games head-to-head, basically saying, not head-to-head, but yeah, picking games head-to-head, or if I chose who would win the actual games, I am correct going into Thursday's night's game. After Thursday night's game in the NFL, 50 games, I picked 50 winners of all the games happening in the NFL. So I think that's a pretty good number. I'm still in first place in a league that I play with a bunch of my friends in picking those games. And I've been either first or second in the last 4 or 5 years. So I know what I'm doing when I say who I think will win the game, but definitely not great at picking who I think will win the game based upon the point spreads. But I was more confident going into last week. I'm very disappointed that I was 7-7. There's 3 games that I'm shocked at the outcome of those games. The first one being Miami going into Atlanta, not only getting 13 points, Miami not only covering those 13, but winning the game in Atlanta was a huge shock. I thought that the Denver Broncos playing at home on Sunday night against the depleted and demoralized New York Giants, favored by 11.5 points, would easily win that game outright. And somehow New York wins not only by, you know, they win convincingly 23-10. So I was really shocked at those games. But some of the games that I said to cover that were a little bit of a risk, New England Patriots were favored by 9.5 against the Jets. And they win controversially against the Jets, but only by 7, 24-17 last week. I chose the San Francisco 49ers, who were getting 11 points. And they were playing Washington in Washington. With Washington coming off a bye, people thought Washington would win by 11 points, and they only win by 2, 26-24. I said take San Francisco on the road. They really had a lot of hard luck, the 49ers being 0-6. But what can you do if you're a betting person? They're actually doing really, they're 5-1 against the spread. The other game that was my lock was Houston favored by 9 over Cleveland. They won 33-17. Trying to think, the other surprise was the Baltimore Ravens playing at home against the Chicago Bears, starting a rookie quarterback. I thought that Baltimore was favored by 6.5 points. I thought they would win and win outright. They lose to Chicago. And my formula of saying, well, if you're a team that played a very tough divisional game the week before, and the next week you go on the road out of conference, you usually lose the game and do not cover the spread. And the Pittsburgh Steelers have been someone that you saw them last year going into Philadelphia after playing Cincinnati very tough. They get destroyed by the Eagles last year, the fourth game of the season. And this year the Bears played Minnesota on a Monday night. They go into Baltimore, known for a hard-hitting defense, and they win the game. So those 3 games, the Chicago game, the Chicago Bears-Baltimore game is surprising. Atlanta-Miami is surprising, and the Jets at Denver was very surprising to me. So I really thought I should have won 10 games and only lost about 4 games last week. So in a way, while 7-7, if you follow my spread for the previous weeks, actually a good week, it wasn't for me in terms of the fact that I thought those 3 games, I was pretty sure, even with the big point spreads there. So that brings us to week 7. And now you see one thing you see in the last week, being 7-7, in the last 3 weeks, 20-24-1. Basically, you start to, well, you don't really see an evening out of it yet, so my theory is blown. But 2 out of the last 3 weeks, starting with week 4, 5, and 6, I've won, lost, and pushed even. So you start to see that the records that I'm picking, or the games that I'm picking, I'm starting to even out. as we head to the season. And remember, no one really does this, picks all these games with the point spreads, and I'm only three games under and through week seven, which means I should get stronger. My picks should go even more. Interesting games this week, I think, point spread-wise, are the biggest surprise of New Orleans Saints going into Green Bay. And both teams, and with Green, and New Orleans is favored by 4 points. It's a road game for New Orleans, which means they're out of the comfort of the dome. They're playing in Green Bay, which is a notoriously hard place to play. And the weather, the conditions, they're playing on a grass field, and the weather will be much cooler in Green Bay outdoors, which usually means that offenses are slowed down and usually favors defenses. But the main reason that obviously the Saints are somewhat favored in this game is the fact that Green Bay lost arguably the second best quarterback in the league and one of the best of all time in Aaron Rodgers, who is out for the year with, or maybe not out for the year, but is going to miss a significant amount of the rest of the season due to a broken collarbone. So the Saints are favored by 4 points, and usually what happens when, and I've known this as Philadelphia Eagles fan for a while, when they lost Randall Cunningham in the early 90s two times for the year, and they lost Donovan McNabb. The trend is usually that the next quarterback that comes in looks awful in their first game, which Brent Hundley did. He threw three interceptions against the swarming Minnesota defense. But now they've had a week to practice. They had a week to sort of tailor the offensive game plan towards Brent Hundley's strengths. I mean, the Green Bay still has a potent amount of wide receivers, and they also have a great running, a pretty good, solid running game. Not the best, but it's pretty solid, more solid than people thought it would be. And the defense usually has to step up. And I can't imagine, I would imagine the defense is going to be really, really attacking the New Orleans Saints, who, by the way, put up 52 points last week against the Detroit Lions. And I said the Lions were 4.5. But New Orleans was winning that game 45-10, and the Lions got it within 45-38 before they scored a defensive touchdown. And it was quite shocking to see the fact that the Saints, that they allowed the Detroit Lions to come all the way back in that game. And that's what Detroit is. They are a come-from-behind team. And if you listen to the show last week, I said Detroit just can't get behind so fast early on. And they did, but then mounted a spirited comeback. So, again, the Lions, I still think, are a contender for the division now with Aaron Rodgers out and for a wild card spot, but they really have to stop getting so far behind. But anyway, going back to New Orleans Saints favored by 4 on the road, I think is a huge surprise. I think Seattle going into the Giants favored by 4 is a bit of a surprise, considering both teams have really poor offenses. And even though the Giants are without two of their best wide receivers and have a poor offensive line, Seattle's offense is not great either. And both teams rely on the strengths of their defense. And New York is a more desperate team. I'm surprised that Seattle is favored and favored by 4. But since with 13 minutes to go, let's go down the picks real fast. The rest of the games, you have the Heckel and Dr. Heckel, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, Jacksonville Jaguars going into Indianapolis, and the Jacksonville's favored by 3 in that point. You have Indianapolis, who lost badly to Tennessee on Monday night. They lost by 14. They're at home against the Jacksonville team. It's a thing I can't really pick right now. If I had to, I'd side with the home team with the points, but Jacksonville for the win. Baltimore, the aforementioned Baltimore Ravens, looking horrible on offense against the Chicago Bears, go into Minnesota. And Minnesota is coming off two divisional wins against the Bears and the Packers. And they host the Baltimore Ravens. Minnesota is favored by 5.5 points. And to be honest, again, it's an out-of-conference game for the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens are another Jekyll and Hyde team. You're really not sure what's going to happen, but I'd have to pick Minnesota with the points and for the win. The Cincinnati Bengals go into Pittsburgh favor, and Pittsburgh's favored by 5.5 points. Again, this division, it's very hard to pick. These teams are so up and down, but Pittsburgh favored by 5.5 at home against Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati plays this one tight, and I think I would pick Cincy with the points, Pittsburgh for the win. The Jets going down to Miami. The Jets offer a hard-fought divisional game against New England, a very controversial game, going to the Miami Dolphins, so I think we'll come back to earth a little bit this week. The Jets' defense is actually pretty good. And I think I would have to side with the Jets in Miami for this game. And the Jets have been playing pretty good ball. I think Miami's win last week against an uninterested Atlanta team was kind of a fluke. I just don't like Jay Cutler, even though they're at home in a division game. I'll take the Jets. Tampa Bay goes into Buffalo. Tampa Bay's quarterback, Jameis Winston, is a bit injured with his shoulder, but they do have Ryan Fitzpatrick, the grizzly veteran, much travel veteran that goes around and slings the ball all over the place. So in a way, he led Tampa Bay back into the game against Arizona. Tampa Bay was on the road last week in Arizona, got down 31-0, but they battled back and outscored the Arizona Cardinals 33-7 after that. And due to some crazy two-point conversion tries, Tampa Bay had a chance to win that game with Ryan Fitzpatrick. However, they go into Baltimore. They also have Sean McDermott. And remember what McDermott has done against his former divisional foes when he was the defensive coordinator for Carolina. He shut down Carolina's offense. He shut down Atlanta's offense and won on the road. I think he shuts down Tampa Bay's offense. They're at home and they're coming off a bye, and I say Buffalo wins and covers those points. Carolina goes into Chicago. Carolina coming off a very hard-fought defeat against my Philadelphia Eagles. Go into Chicago. Carolina's favored by 3. And I'm a little worried about Carolina in the way, the sense of the way they finished that game against the Eagles. Cam Newton looked like he was injured and banged up. They also lose their star, linebacker Luke Kuechly to another concussion on a hit that really didn't look like it warranted a concussion. And if he got a concussion off of that hit, I think Luke Kuechly has some major decisions to make. But anyway, Carolina was pretty much carried by Cam Newton against the Eagles. And what happened was, towards the end of the game, Cam Newton was there about the 10-yard line or so. He was rushing in for a touchdown, and he leaps from about the 3-yard line and tried to overstretch it. And he really took a nasty hit. And after that hit, he just looked like he didn't look the same. And I'm wondering if that hit will linger. You also have the Bears' defense isn't what it used to be. It's a road game in Chicago, but does Chicago ride the momentum of beating beating these Baltimore Ravens and they're back at home? I think Chicago, if they can shut down the run, can win this game outright. So I'm going to take the Bears at home. Again, this New Orleans Saints-Green Bay matchup with the Saints favored by 4, I think there's no way the Saints win this game. I still think they're an up-and-down team. And I know that Aaron Rodgers is out, and that's a huge hit. But now they have Brett Hundley back there who, he's a backup quarterback, and he hasn't been tested much. But you also have an experienced Super Bowl-winning coach in Mike McCarthy. He knows how to tailor the offense for backup quarterbacks. He's coached under the Bill Walsh tree, and he knows how to prepare backup quarterbacks. And I think that defense is going to be swarming New Orleans. As much as I love Drew Brees and the Saints, being a former resident of New Orleans, I just don't think they cover the points or win in Green Bay. And Green Bay also knows that it has to tread water. It has to keep winning games until they get Aaron Rodgers back so they don't lose the division. So I think this is a big test for both the Saints and Green Bay. And I think the winner of this game pretty much should be the favorite for their division, even with the Carolina Panthers kind of somewhat controlling the AFC South. But I think New Orleans Saints are a dark horse contender for that division. Another game in London, a divisional game, which is rarely you see in London. The Rams and the Cardinals are now in London. The Rams are – it's a neutral site game, even though Arizona is considered the home team. Rams are favored by 3, which I think is an interesting choice for them to be favored in this game. And after watching the Arizona Cardinals last week, their offense comes back alive with the rejuvenated Adrian Peterson. It seemed like he took a lot of pressure. Can the Rams, who have a similar defense to Tampa Bay, can the Rams shut down the Arizona running game and therefore neutralize Carson Palmer? We'll see. But I do like the Rams' offense. I don't like Arizona's defense so much, so I'm going to take the Rams with the 3 points. Dallas, off of a bye, goes into San Francisco. And, yes, Ezekiel Elliott looks like he still will play as a suspension or lack of suspension has been challenged on various levels of the American judicial system. But long story short, they're in San Francisco. A San Francisco team coming off some tough losses. As I mentioned, they're 0-6, they're record-wise, but 5-1 against the spread. Dallas is favored by 6. I think Dallas comes out. They play a little bit better than they played against Green Bay and the Rams. They're coming off a 2-game winning streak, and Dallas sort of has to win this game because the loser of the Monday Night Eagles Redskins tilt pretty much is in striking distance for the wild card matchup. And especially if Washington wins on Monday night, the division gets a little bit easier for the Cowboys to get back into the race. But if the Eagles win Monday night, they pretty much have the division, I don't want to say locked up, but it'll be a struggle for those teams to catch the Eagles. So I think Dallas goes into San Francisco, and I think they take care of business there, and I think they cover the 6 points. Seattle going to New York, the Giants coming off a striking win against the Denver Broncos last week, and a game where I almost picked Denver as my survivor pool or suicide pool winner. Luckily, I picked Houston. I think Giants cover this game. I think they win this game at home. I think their defense is rejuvenated, and they're facing another bad offensive team in the Seattle Seahawks. I think Seattle's offense is actually worse than Denver's, so especially the offensive line part. I think the Giants win this game and cover the points. A Super Bowl rematch in New England with the another Jekyll and Hyde Atlanta Falcons team going into New England. Everyone knows about how porous the New England defense has been scoring-wise, but they're winning games. And they gave up only 17 points against the Jets last week and 14 points the week before against Tampa Bay. They're allowing something like 440 yards or passing yards a game. But they're starting to be situational defense, and I have to steal this from some of the talk sports radio I was listening to yesterday. They're learning how to not give up the big plays and not give up the points. Atlanta, I have no idea how to read them. They're playing yet another AFC East team. They lost to the aforementioned Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills. Everyone says it's a Super Bowl hangover for the Falcons, and if that's the case, then the coach has to go. Basically, Dan Quinn gets the Falcons to the Super Bowl in a senior year, and I like Dan Quinn, but there's no reason this team should be focused on the Super Bowl or the letdown of that. I think they're starting to get banged up because of all the games they've played being a contender in there. And you see that, you know, even if you don't win the Super Bowl but are consistently in the playoffs, your body and your team is playing many more games and eventually start breaking down. I think their offensive line is down, but I think the key person and the person who's on my fantasy team, by the way, Julio Jones, who is a difference maker out there. He's a game changer at the wide receiver position. And he just not has been himself all year long. He's been very inconsistent. He's probably battling some injuries. And again, it could be because they've played a lot of football games over the last couple of years due to their playoff runs and their success. But he's the reason why I think when he's not at 100%, it allows defense to focus more less on him and more on the other receivers. And Atlanta's struggling in the passing game to only score 17 points at home against both Buffalo and Miami is ridiculous with that offense. So I really think it's the Julio Jones factor is slowing them down. And I think New England covers this game, wins it outright. And then the aforementioned, probably the best game of the week, and finally a game on Monday night. Although the Sunday night games have been pretty good for the NFL, the Washington Redskins go into my Eagles, go into there. Washington's looking to avenge a week one loss in which the Eagles won, and the Redskins just looked terrible that day and only lost by a little bit. I think 27, I forget the score, it's 27-20 or 27-24. Week one was the Eagles 30-17. So they lost by 13 points to the Eagles. Eagles are favored by 4.5 points. I'm betting again against the Eagles this week, but I think the Eagles will win the game. I don't think they're going to win. I think the line's like 4.5 or 5. Josh Norman, the star cornerback for the Redskins, has been declared out. I think that's why the last time I looked at a line was 5 points. I think that's the reason. I still think, though, Kirk Cousins has found his rhythm. You're seeing – sorry, there's 90 seconds left. He's getting more in rhythm with his new wide receivers. He's getting young Josh Doctson, the first-round draft pick from last year, 2016, who hasn't done much. He's now healthy. He's now getting involved in the passing game. The Eagles' secondary does tackle very well. There's two key linemen out for the Washington Redskins, but one is a backup lineman, although they do have their all-pro left tackle. Trent Williams is also banged up, and he will play. So the game favors the Eagles' defense, and I think it favors the Eagles overall, but this just looks like if you want to be nostalgic, since we're all thinking about the good old days of the 80s and 90s, I think this is another NFC East backyard brawl. I think the both defenses, which are spirited and which are very well played, will be a more defensive game. I could see – I don't know if the Eagles will put up 30, but I could see them putting up about 17, 21, 24, and I think they win this game either 21-17 – or maybe even 20-13, which I will pick the Redskins with the points and the Eagles to win. A lot of stuff has been said today on our show today. I'm kind of a little bit all over the place. Maybe I need to sit down and actually, instead of just speaking off the top of my head, to write things down and to prepare a little bit and maybe do more focus then. Remember to inspire the inspiration. Don't wait for the inspiration to inspire you. It's been the Matt Kwasaborski Show. Goodbye, everybody.